From Pacifica, this is Democracy Now!
He has to be sent to Venezuela to continue the trial that was going on against him in connection with the destruction of a Cuban airplane. If the U.S. doesn't do that, according to the Montreal Convention, the only option that they have is to do that trial here.
Ricardo Alarcón, president of the Cuban National Assembly, speaking about the anti-Castro Cuban militant Luis Posada Carriles. Posada was scheduled to go on trial this week in Texas, not on terrorism charges in connection with the 1976 bombing of a Cuban airliner that killed all 73 people on board, but for immigration fraud. Now a U.S. judge has tossed out even that indictment, making Posada a free man. In a Democracy Now! Exclusive, President Ricardo Alarcón will join us live from Havana by satellite. Then we go from terror in the skies to terror in the seas with a look at how the alleged plotter in the 1985 bombing of Greenpeace boat the Rainbow Warrior is now selling weapons to the U.S. government and living in the D.C. area. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. The Cuban and Venezuelan governments have repeated their calls for the extradition of former CIA operative Luis Posada Carriles to stand trial for his role in the 1976 bombing of a Cuban airliner that killed all 73 people on board, including Cuba's whole fencing team. Posada was scheduled to go on trial in Texas Friday for immigration fraud, but a U.S. federal judge tossed out the indictment, making Posada a free man. On Wednesday, Cuban Foreign Minister Felipe Perez Roque accused the Bush administration of interference.
Posada Carriles being free is not an accident. Posada is free because there is a plan by the White House, authorized by Bush, to prevent Posada from going to jail.
Meanwhile, family members of the victims of the airline attack spoke out in Havana. This is Odalis Perez, whose father co-piloted the downed plane.
Above all else, we feel a deep indignation because knowing that one more time the United States has left Luis Posada free on the streets with impunity, for us, it is a deep indignation.
We'll go to Havana for an exclusive interview with Cuban National Assembly President Ricardo Alarcón after headlines. In Iraq, at least 14 people were killed and 87 wounded in a car bombing in the northern Kurdish town of Arbil. The explosion struck a building housing the Interior Ministry. It was the first major attack in the area in more than 3 years. Meanwhile, hundreds of demonstrators turned out in Qadamiya to protest the visit of Vice President Dick Cheney. Iraq was Cheney's first stop on a week-long Middle East tour. More details have emerged on the U.S. massacre of 24 Iraqi civilians in the town of Haditha in November 2005. On Wednesday, Sergeant Sanek de la Cruz testified he urinated on the dead body of an Iraqi killed by his fellow Marines. Sergeant Cruz also said he saw his squad leader shoot down five Iraqi civilians who were trying to surrender. The testimony came in a pre-trial hearing for a Marine charge for the massacre and the ensuing cover-up. Meanwhile, in Baghdad, the U.S. Embassy has ordered all to staff and the staff to wear flak jackets and helmets while outdoors in the Green Zone. The order comes following a wave of recent rocket attacks. The Green Zone is one of Iraq's most heavily guarded areas. The National Security Archive has released a pre-war memo showing the Pentagon plan to control the Iraqi media 3 months before the U.S. invasion. In a three-page document, the Pentagon calls for a rapid reaction media team, saying, quote, having professional U.S.-trained Iraqi media teams immediately in place to portray a new Iraq by Iraqis for Iraqis with hopes for a prosperous democratic future will have a profound psychological and political impact on the Iraqi people. A reconstituted free Iraqi domestic media can serve as a model in the Middle East, where so much Arab hate media are themselves equivalent to weapons of mass destruction. 11 House Republicans have warned President Bush the Iraq war is risking the Republican Party's future and that he cannot count on their open-ended support. In a meeting along with the top White House officials Tuesday, Congress members presented Bush with, quote, dismal polling numbers showing growing opposition to the war. In other Iraq news, House Democrats say they plan to introduce a measure that would increase the number of Iraqi refugees allowed in the United States. The Responsibility to Iraqi Refugees Act would allow an additional 20,000 Iraqi refugees over the next 2 years, with another 15,000 families eligible for special immigrant status for each of the next 4 years. In Britain, two men have been found guilty for leaking a memo detailing a conversation in which President Bush reportedly tells British Prime Minister Tony Blair he wants to bomb the Doha headquarters of the Arabic television network Al Jazeera. David Keogh, a former civil servant, and Leo O'Connor, a former parliamentary researcher, were charged with violating the Official Secrets Act. Most of the trial was held in secret, with reporters barred from the proceedings. Bush and Blair's meeting was recorded by Blair's advisor on foreign affairs. The memo came with a note reading, quote, "This must not be copied further and must only be seen by those with real need to know." Meanwhile, in breaking news, British Prime Minister Tony Blair has announced he will step down as prime minister at the end of next month after a decade in office. In the occupied territories, Israeli troops beat dozens of Israeli peace activists protesting a roadblock in the West Bank city of Hebron. The group had come to help local Palestinians place ropes around large stones to remove them from blocking a main road. They were able to move one stone before Israeli troops arrived on the scene. This is Israeli activist Ben, who did not give his last name.
He knows that he's Israeli, but he doesn't care. He started hitting people. He hit my friend, who is arrested now, and then he came and hit me really strong in my lung. Nothing. We were just standing there. He started hitting people, and he was just telling us to go back, and we jumped on us, and he hit me with the barrel of the gun.
The protest comes as the World Bank has issued harsh criticism of Israel's system of closures and checkpoints in the occupied territories. In a new report, the World Bank says Israel's hold over the West Bank is preventing a revival of the Palestinian economy and harming Israel's security. The report says Palestinian freedom of movement is the exception and not the rule, hampered by a near 50% increase in roadblocks over the last 2 years. In Germany, police have carried out a mass crackdown on activists ahead of next month's gathering of world leaders at the G8 summit. More than 900 police officials targeted at least 40 sites across 6 states. Several people were arrested. Police say they were targeting protesters planning violent attacks. In Hamburg, demonstrators poured into the streets following a raid on a local youth center. Police walled off the center with barricades and used water cannons to disperse the crowds. Officials have meanwhile erected a steel wall topped with razor wire around the resort town where leaders will meet. More than 100,000 people are expected to turn out for a protest that'll be confined to a town 20 miles away. Back in the United States, President Bush toured the Kansas town of Greensburg Wednesday, days after a hurricane that killed 10 people. The president faced continued criticism. Recovery efforts have been hampered because much of Kansas National Guard personnel and equipment is in Iraq and Afghanistan. Kansas lacks about half the large equipment it could use for recovery efforts and debris removal, including dump trucks and front loaders. President Bush said he could offer this help.
Our role as government officials is to work with the state and local folks to get whatever help is appropriate here, whatever help is in the law, to be here as quickly as possible. My mission is to, today, though, is to lift people's spirits as best as I possibly can, is to hopefully touch somebody's soul.
President Bush was accompanied by Kansas Governor Kathleen Sebelius. Sebelius said another major incident needing Guard support would force her into, quote, a terrible choice of who to help. She said, quote, after 4 years of war, there's no question that year after year, Guard supplies are depleted not just in Kansas, but all over the country. The governor's comments came as Defense Secretary Robert Gates admitted National Guard equipment levels are at their lowest since the 9/11 attacks. Appearing Wednesday on Capitol Hill, Gates said National Guard members have only 56% of their required equipment. A coalition of religious groups has launched a campaign to offer sanctuary to immigrant families who risk being separated under the threat of deportation. Members of the new sanctuary movement say they'll open their churches, mosques, and synagogues to shelter families facing deportation orders. At least 6 congregations in Los Angeles, New York, Seattle, and San Diego will harbor one family each. A former U.S. attorney has added his name to the list of eight federal prosecutors whose dismissals have led to a congressional probe. Former Kansas City attorney Todd Graves says he was asked to step down in January of last year, months before the other prosecutors were let go. The disclosure comes ahead of today's second Capitol Hill appearance for Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez. And finally, the Associated Press is reporting the Oscar-winning filmmaker Michael Moore is under investigation for taking ailing 9/11 rescue workers to Cuba for medical treatment. Moore filmed the trip for his upcoming documentary about the U.S. healthcare system called Sicko. The Treasury Department's looking into whether Moore violated U.S. embargo laws against Cuba. A source close to Moore says Moore has placed a copy of the film in a safe house outside the United States to protect it from possible government interference. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report.
Al cementerio se va la vaca de mala leche. Al cementerio se va, inocente condena. Al cementerio se va la vaca de mala leche. Al cementerio se va, ni Dios le va a perdonar. Bailemos todo el vaca loca, ese ritmo terminal. Bailemos todo el vaca loca, bailemos todo hasta el final. Pa'l cementerio se va la vaca de mala leche. Pa'l cementerio se va, pudriéndose la sociedad. Bailemos todo el vaca loca, ese ritmo terminal. Bailemos todo el vaca loca, bailemos todo hasta el final. Ay, bye, ay, bye, ay, vaca loca, ay, bye, ay, bye, ay, bye, ay, vaca loca, ay, bye.
Vaca Loco, Manu Chao, here on Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
And welcome to all of our listeners and viewers around the country and around the world. The Cuban and Venezuelan governments have repeated their calls for former CIA operative Luis Posada Carriles to be extradited to stand trial for his role in the 1976 bombing of a Cuban airliner that killed 73 people. Posada was scheduled to go on trial in Texas on Friday for immigration fraud, but a U.S. federal judge tossed out the indictment Tuesday, making Posada a free man. Critics of the Bush administration's handling of the Posada case say it demonstrates a U.S. double standard on terrorism. Posada has been linked to several acts of terrorism in addition to the 1976 airline bombing. He's currently being investigated by a grand jury in New Jersey for masterminding a string of hotel bombings in Havana in the 1990s. Evidence has also emerged linking him to a plot to assassinate Cuban leader Fidel Castro.
Meanwhile, pressure is growing in Washington for President Bush to take action against Posada. On Wednesday, Democratic Congressmember William Delahunt urged Bush to detain Posada and certify him as a terrorist under the Patriot Act. Delahunt said the U.S. government should not be giving sanctuary to a man he described as, quote, one of the Western Hemisphere's most notorious killers. Democratic Congressmember Jose Serrano of New York also condemned the Bush administration's handling of the Posada case. Serrano said, quote, it further weakens our moral standing in the world as we will undoubtedly be seen as being biased in our ongoing war on terrorism. We go now to Havana for an exclusive satellite interview with the president of the Cuban National Assembly, Ricardo Alarcón. Welcome to Democracy Now!
Good morning, Amy.
It's good to have you with us.
Nice to be here.
First, your response to the release of Posada and also the dropping of the charges against him, albeit they were just on immigration issues.
Well, I think that what happened the other day in El Paso
was a decision by Judge Cardon that put an end to a charade that was organized by the administration. They had spent 2 years not indicting Posada, not prosecuting him for his real crimes, but playing games with this alleged migratory infractions that, according to the judge, in case he were to be found guilty of those violations, he would get only half a year or 1 year in prison, and he has served already two. The issue now is very simple. I think that the situation is now more clear. He is a free man because the charges were dismissed, the migratory phony charges. Now it is up to the U.S. administration to abide by its obligations according to international treaties, according to American law, to prosecute a terrorist or to allow him to go free. I think that the issue is now more clear than it was before due to the maneuvering of the administration.
Here in the United States, obviously, many Americans are still not aware of the role of Posada Carriles in past terrorism actions. And it's been caught up quite a bit, obviously, in the continuing conflict between the U.S. government and the government of President Chavez and, of course, of your government. But the indictments of him in Venezuela predate the Chavez administration, don't they? Could you talk a little bit about those original indictments?
The destruction at mid-air of a Cubana airplane in 1976 took place at a time where Mr. Chavez was a teenager beginning his military education. Nobody knew about him. It was a very pro-American administration in Venezuela, led by President Carlos Andrés Pérez, who ask publicly, Juan, publicly at the UN, to the U.S. government, as friend, please help us to make justice in this case, because people are saying in the Caribbean that the CIA was involved on that. It was the Venezuelan government. It was the Venezuelan highest court who declared Mr. Posada a fugitive of justice when he escaped, quote-unquote, from prison before the court, the Venezuelan court, having sentenced him or having concluded the process. Remember that this man almost immediately went from a Venezuelan prison to Ilopango base in San Salvador, and he reappeared as a key element in the Iran-Contra affair, distributing weapons to the Contras at the time, the Nicaraguan Contras, at the time when the U.S. Congress had forbidden that and violating the law from the White House. Then this man disappeared again, continued to be a fugitive of justice, and reappeared 2 years ago in Miami. What is the situation now? After 9/11, the U.S. promoted a resolution that is mandatory at the Security Council that, among other things, establishes that arguments of a political nature may not be admitted to deny extraditions to individuals associated with or allegedly associated with terrorist actions. And that is exactly what the U.S. is doing at this moment. They do not have any option, according to international law, either to extradite Posada to Venezuela, to continue the trial he was going through there 20 years ago, or to prosecute him and present him to an American court of law. But on those real crimes, not on phony migratory charges. And that's in a very summary fashion. But let me tell you something else. Last week, a number of documents were declassified. They appear now in the National Security Archives website, especially documents coming from the authorities from two governments in the Caribbean, Trinidad and Tobago and Barbados. Remember that this man and his group were not just involved in destroying a Cuban plane. A Cuban plane, by the way, in which a number of young Guyanese were traveling and were killed. The plane, before the plane attack, these same individuals attacked several Trinidadian buildings, institutions, several Barbadian buildings and institutions, Jamaicans and so on. In other words, what the U.S. is doing by not prosecuting Mr. Posada on that, it's not only a bilateral matter with Cuba or with Venezuela, it's also an insult to the Caribbean nations, which together we work, we cooperated in the 70s, and we decided collectively at an international conference that was held in Port of Spain, the capital of Trinidad and Tobago, that Venezuela will prosecute and have the trial. Barbados investigated the technical aspect of the destruction of the plane, and they succeeded in determining that that was the result of bombs that were exploded at the passenger's cabin of the plane. Trinidad and Tobago, on his part, had detained the two material authors of that act, and they made the criminal investigation and provided plenty of evidence that were submitted to the Venezuelan tribunal. In other words, it was an example of international cooperation involving the whole Caribbean area. And now the U.S. is insulting the Caribbean nations, the Cuban people, of course, the victims of that heinous act, but also the American people, because it is ignoring its very clear obligations, either, I repeat, either to extradite or to prosecute, according to the Montreal Convention on Crimes Against Civil Aviation. There are only two choices, not a third one. You cannot find in that convention a third option, having your friend walking around in Miami. That's completely illegal. It's an insult to humanity.
We're talking to Ricardo Alarcón, president of the Cuban National Assembly. He is sitting outside in Havana, Cuba. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. And then we'll go to Washington, D.C., from terror on in the skies to terror in the seas, and talk about a man selling weapons to the U.S. government who was involved in the bombing of the Rainbow Warrior. That was the Greenpeace ship in 1985 in Auckland Harbor in New Zealand. He's living in McLean, Virginia. Stay with us.
Yeah.
Orquesta Aragon here on Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. We're broadcasting on over 500 stations around the country and the world, on Pacifica and NPR radio stations, on low-power FM and college and community stations, on public access TV and PBS TV stations, and both TV satellite networks. On Dish Network Channel 9415 Free Speech TV, 9410 Link TV, and on DirecTV Channel 375. And we're video and audio podcasting at democracynow.org. And our headlines are also available in Spanish in audio and transcript form. They're broadcasting on over 150 stations around the world. As we continue our exclusive interview with Ricardo Alarcón by satellite outside in Havana, Cuba. Ricardo Alarcón, president of the Cuban National Assembly, long talked about as the number three man in Cuba. We're talking about the release of Luis Posada Quilides, the actual dropping of all charges against him. He was supposed to stand trial in El Paso, Texas, tomorrow on immigration fraud. Long implicated in the 1976 bombing of the Cubana civilian airliner flight that killed all 73 people on board, among those dead, the entire Cuban fencing team. Ricardo Alarcón, one of the bits of information that came up in the lead up to the trial that now will not happen is the discussion to try to stop Posada from talking about his CIA connections, the fact that he was on the CIA payroll. What do you know about this?
Well, the government presented a motion asking for the complete exclusion of any reference to Posada's connections with the CIA, arguing that those links were finished in 1976. Mr. Posada himself, on a legal document in reply to that motion, rejected that, and he said that he has been working for the CIA beyond that date. To quote him, more or less, he said, "I have been involved with them for more than 25 years. That means that, and he made as a point of reference, he recalled, as he said, it's a matter of history, that the Iran-Contra affair that was well in the 80s, and he was working for the CIA, and not only the CIA, the White House, remember, at that time. That means that according to him, he was a CIA agent at the time he masterminded the destruction on mid-air of a civilian airplane. And I imagine why the U.S. Government, the prosecutors, didn't want any discussion about CIA connection at that trial. At that phony trial, by the way, that now doesn't exist anymore due to the decision of the judge.
And also, President Alarcón, the issue of whether he is retired from his activities in terrorism. Clearly, about 2 years ago in Miami, one of his major backers, Santiago Alvarez, is one of his financial backers, was arrested with a huge cache of weapons and explosives. So it would seem to indicate that at least that there is still some continuing activity of those who are seeking to foment terrorism against Cuba and other other progressive movements in Latin America.
More than that, Juan, I don't know if you followed the, some news that came out from Miami this week. Santiago Alvarez and Mr. Mitat found an agreement with the prosecutors, the federal prosecutors, to reduce their very low sentencing. They got 3 years and 4 years. Now that will be reduced, do you know, at the exchange of what? A few dozens of automatic weapons, some C4 explosives, some bombs, some other weaponry. That means these guys were found with a lot of weaponry, illegal weaponry. Now, obviously, they have more. They give another amount, and in exchange of that, their sentence will be reduced.
How much do they still have in hiding in Miami? And that's the news of this week, last Monday, I think.
Ricardo Alarcón, what about the FBI coming to Cuba and the Congress members and senators who are objecting to the FBI going to Cuba to gather information about Luis Posada's crimes and links to terrorism?
Well, let me tell you, first of all, that it is true that they came here and they got information that they were seeking. I would like to add that that was not the first time. We have always been prepared and advocating international cooperation in the struggle against terrorism. Remember that in 1997-98, a delegation from the FBI came down here after some bombings in Havana hotels and some tourist resorts down here in Cuba. At that time, we got in contact with President Clinton. We warned him that part of the plans that existed at that moment, which, by the way, had been confirmed by some of the declassified documents that you may find at the National Security Archives, that they were planning again, Emmy, again, the destruction of civilian airplanes at mid-air. Not Cuban planes, but foreign planes, bringing foreign tourists to this country. Ironically, it was 98. Nothing happened. No one was indicted. No one was prosecuted. And instead of that, the U.S. authorities, the FBI, arrested five Cubans who were peacefully, without harming anybody, unarmed, were gathering precisely the information we transmitted to the FBI. We have been doing that since that time, and very recently down here in Havana, and we are still waiting. What is the U.S. going to do? Are they going to abide by their international obligations? Or again, we'll have to wait and see until another attack, another destruction happens.
Well, your intelligence activities in the past have uncovered several plots. I seem to recall that back in 2000, when President Castro was in Panama for the Iberian summit, that he then announced that your intelligence had discovered that Posada Carriles was in Panama that very moment, plotting more attacks, and some explosives were found. Your sense of do you feel that your country basically is having to continue to ferret out these terrorists with no assistance from the United States or any other major nations?
I didn't get completely the question.
Is it your sense that your country is being forced to try to do its own intelligence to ferret out, to discover these plots with no assistance at all from the United States or other major countries?
Of course. Of course. The whole process around Mr. Posada is the best demonstration of the innocence of our five comrades now arrested or in prison in the U.S. is the best proof of the need of defense that we have. It's a principle of national law, the so-called doctrine of necessity. In some circumstances, you need to violate some minor regulations, as they did, in order to save a more important value, in this case, human lives. Certainly, you have Mr. Posada back in Miami together with his old pal, Mr. Orlando Bosch, who was pardoned by President Bush. In a few weeks, maybe, they will be joined by Mr. Santiago Alvarez and Osvaldo Mitad to continue playing with the rest of the C4, with the rest of the weaponry that they kept. And what can we do? Well, on the one hand, we tried, we have tried time and again to persuade the U.S. authorities to recall them their obligations. Please try to stop this. Please try to avoid that incident to take place. And how could we do that? By human intelligence, by having people that sacrifice their lives, that at a very high price in terms of their individual welfare, abandon their families to penetrate those groups, to find out, to learn, and to help us communicate the FBI authorities to see if they would stop those actions. I think it's absolutely clear. We have not only that right, we have that need. The U.S. now is I think everybody there accept the concept of human intelligence, that if somebody had to learn about 9/11, you may have been able to avoid that. And the five compatriots that are in prison in the U.S. Saved many lives. They help us to know in advance and to reduce the consequences, in some cases, sharing the information with the FBI.
We're talking to Ricardo Alarcón, president of the Cuban National Assembly. He's in Havana. What about President Fidel Castro? How is his health right now? Many expected to see him at the May Day celebration. He didn't show. He hasn't been seen in public since July 31st, 2006, since handing over power to his brother, Raul. How is his health, Mr. Alarcón?
He continues to recover. Emmy, I can tell you that he's doing pretty well. He has, you can see in the photo, the most recent photograph, he has gained weight. He's, physically speaking, his situation has improved a lot and continues to improve. And at the same time, well, he has just published his fifth article in a row. He's reading a lot, writing, and very much involved in the affairs of the country and the world. And he didn't show up on May 1st, but as you have said, I am in the outside in Havana. It is just 8:30, a little bit more. At that time was the parade, and I can assure you that the temperature down here is very, very high. To be standing there for a couple of hours, perhaps it was not the appropriate thing to do for a person that is following a certain discipline advised by his doctors. I wish I would have been also reading a book instead of supporting this tremendous sunshine. Mm.
Have you seen him recently? And what actually is wrong with Fidel Castro?
Well, I will not move from what we have said. Remember that this is the man against whom more attempts on his life has been made. Mr. Posada is a good example. He has spent decades trying to kill him. We have to be very discreet on the what happens to him. But he himself explained in his first document, his proclamation, that he had suffered a serious and risky surgery. But he is in the process of recovering from that. That takes time, according to the doctors. And after all, he continues to be the leader of this revolution and continues to be contributing to it in a different manner than the one many people were accustomed. He is less present and is not present in demonstrations and so on. But you can read, you can communicate with him, you can see how he is thinking about certain important issues of today's world, which implies also that he's reading a lot. and meeting with people to handle certain important issues. It's a matter of priorities rather than abandoning the responsibilities.
I'd like to ask you also about the situation in Cuba vis-a-vis the rest of Latin America. Clearly, the wave of popular elections bringing in left-of-center governments in Latin America has continued, with the exception perhaps of the Mexican elections and Colombia. But how does Cuba faring in all of this, given the long period of the special period, the economic problems that the country faced about a decade ago? How is the economy of Cuba faring given all these changes that are occurring in Latin America?
Well, we never had a better relationship with Latin America than at the present time. For many years, we only had diplomatic relations and friendly relations with the small Caribbean nations and Mexico. Now we have, of course, with the whole Caribbean and the practically everybody in Latin America. And it is not only a matter of diplomatic, formal, friendly relationship. It's also an increase in trade, investments, economic cooperation, cultural cooperation. Venezuela, of course, in a very important place, but not only Venezuela. Also Brazil, also Argentina, Chile, the rest. That is a reflection of something that goes beyond Cuba, that maybe some people in Washington should begin to think about it. Latin America is changing, has changed a lot, and is changing. What has happened that the model that was imposed upon our peoples, so-called neoliberal economic model with its political reflection, has failed, has completely failed, and has provoked the eruption of masses of people claiming for a new life, for better conditions, that has led to those changes in the area. And I am sure more changes will come. And that process will not be stopped. In the middle of that, of course, Cuba is enjoying, as I said, the best context that in any other moment of our history. But apart from that, Cuba has excellent relations with a very important nation in this world named China, and with other countries, including Russia, some Europeans, and this legend about isolating Cuba and so on reminds me the other lies of the administration about the weapons of mass destruction or Al-Qaeda linked with Saddam and so on. It doesn't make sense. The U.S. is being defeated, is being isolated on that particular issue. You come down here, you will see investors from other countries, you will see partners from every part of the world.
Ricardo Alarcón, we just have a minute, but I have a quick question about Guantanamo. Reports that when in a post-Castro Cuba, it will be turned into an immigration center for Cubans to come to the United States, but more importantly, how it's being used right now as a prison for hundreds of men from around the world. We have 30 seconds.
This prison should be closed down immediately, and Guantanamo should be returned to its rightful owner, the people of Cuba. And when we get, it won't be necessarily after this or that, when justice is made and returned to Cuba, for the first time the Cuban people would be able to use the best, the largest bay in the southern part of our country, which is Guantanamo, which has never been under Cuban control.
Ricardo Alarcón, we want to thank you for being with us, President of the Cuban National Assembly, speaking to us from Havana. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. We'll be back in a minute.
Reloj, dame tu reloj, pastora.
Arsenio Rodriguez here on Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report, and a quick correction on a headline in Kansas. It was a tornado that took the lives of Kansans in these last few days. Well, this is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
We go now from terror in the skies to a story about terror in the seas. 22 years ago, a group of French government agents blew up a ship known as the Rainbow Warrior off the coast of New Zealand. On board were activists from the group Greenpeace, who were protesting French nuclear testing in the Pacific. One member of Greenpeace, Fernando Pereira, died in the blast. 13 French agents were identified as being directly involved in the bombing, but only two were ever convicted. Now it has been revealed that the commander of the French unit is living freely in McLean, Virginia.
His name is Luis Pierre Delay. He is the president of the arms manufacturer FNH USA, a company that has government contracts with the Department of Homeland Security, Secret Service, and the Department of Defense. Greenpeace has urged the Department of Homeland Security to report Delay. By the way, his name is spelled D-I-L-L-A-I-S, to deport Delay because of his direct ties to an act of state terrorism. But the Bush administration has not moved on the request. We left a message at Delay's office in McLean, but didn't hear back from him. In 2005, he admitted to being involved in the bombing. During an interview with a journalist from New Zealand, he said, quote, "I did not know I would be involved in the operation to kill anyone, but when you are in the military, you obey your orders." To talk more about the case, Deepa Isaac joins us in Washington. She is a staff attorney for Greenpeace. Welcome to Democracy Now!
Thank you.
Explain exactly what Delay's involvement was and what happened that day in the Auckland Harbor in New Zealand in 1985.
Well, Delay was the mission commander of the operation, and the French themselves termed the operation Operation Satanic. And for this, he was the mission commander, and as part of that, he organized the operation, and he also drove the inflatable boat, which dropped off two people that planted the bombs on the bottom of the Rainbow Warrior.
How do you know this?
Huge amounts of investigation happened after the bombing itself. The New Zealand authorities looked into this information. There was a great deal of investigation that happened. Recently, New Zealand documentaries also have investigated the matter. They identified approximately 13 people who were agents during this event, and he is one of those people.
Why were only two arrested and convicted if there were so many involved?
Well, this is a very complicated issue because it's a state-sponsored terrorist event. So because of that, there were a lot of negotiations that were going on between France and New Zealand being where the bombing itself took place. So there were a variety of different things. People in this operation were also related to people within the administration in France at the time. There's a lot of different intervening factors. I don't think there was a very specific methodical justice process that happened.
And how did you learn that he was living here in the United States?
We learned about this from those New Zealand journalists themselves when they were doing the documentary.
Ken Silverstein has an interesting piece on the website of Harper's alleged plotter in Rainbow Warrior bombing, selling weapons to the U.S. government. Can you explain, Deepa Isaac, exactly what FNH USA is, the company that Louis-Pierre Delay is involved with, heads up here in the United States, and his direct relationship with the U.S. government?
He's actually the president of FNH USA. FNH USA is the U.S. subsidiary of a Belgian corporation, and they're specifically arms dealers. They sell arms to the United States government through Homeland Security, through the Department of Defense, through various police departments, even in the United States. And he is the president of that organization, and he has direct contracts with the United States government.
So, in essence, one of the, as I understand it, one of the contracts with the Pentagon is to outfit special operations units with weapons, and that they're supposed to be involved in the fight against terrorism.
Yes, that's exactly it. The weapons that are being sold from FNH USA are being used by the Bush administration's war on terror. I mean, it's you know, very clearly ironic situation that they are buying arms from someone who's acknowledged that he was involved in terrorist activities and the murder of at least one person.
I'm looking at both your letter, Greenpeace's letter to the Assistant Secretary Julie Myers of Homeland Security, calling for the deportation and detention of DeLay, as well as their response. In November 9th, 2006, William Howard, principal legal advisor for U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, said they have forwarded your letter to the for appropriate action. You have written in your letter addressing a joint session of Congress 9 days after the horrific attacks of September 11, 2001. President Bush declared from this day forward any nation that continues to harbor or support terrorism will be regarded by the United States as a hostile regime. And you write, right now, a man who has confessed to his role directing in an act of state terrorism, a man who confessed to New Zealand television his role in sabotage, bombing, and murder, lives among us. In the name of security and anti-terrorism measures, this administration has repeatedly restricted the rights of individuals and organizations such as Greenpeace to conduct legitimate and peaceful protests. It would be hypocrisy of the highest order if, while maintaining such restrictions, it took no action against Louis-Pierre DeLay, who is engaged in sabotage by participating and planning the bombing of the Rainbow Warrior. We respectfully request the deportation of Mr. DeLay as an undesirable alien on the basis of his previous act of terrorism. Why just his deportation? If he is a terrorist living freely in the United States, why aren't you calling for him to be charged and tried?
Well, that is a decision for governments to make. Specifically, this letter was addressed to the United States government. So we're asking them to bring him to justice, whether that's in the form of deportation, getting rid of these contracts, not doing work with a terrorist. That would also be an issue for New Zealand. That's an issue for France. That's an issue for the Netherlands, where Mr. Pereira, our photographer who was killed, is a citizen of. I mean, we acknowledge and recognize that this incident was 22 years ago, that this terrorist event was back then. However, to us right now, the importance isn't a vendetta specifically against Mr. DeLay. Rather, we want to make sure that the United States government isn't harboring a known terrorist, someone who's acknowledged their role in terrorist activities. You know, we don't want the United States to be buying arms from a terrorist. And part of the issue with all of this is that there's selective prosecution going on. You know, as we mentioned in our letter to the U.S. government, the Bush administration has, in the name of security and anti-terrorism, they've restricted the rights of people in this country, including Greenpeace, for that matter. You know, we've openly acknowledged from our inception that we are strictly a peaceful, nonviolent organization that engages in political speech. Meanwhile, we've been prosecuted, we've been investigated, we've had countless dollars spent on us by the FBI investigating our activities, and yet they're spending thousands, millions of dollars in arms contracts with a terrorist. So a big part of this is wanting the U.S. government to acknowledge and then reverse this trend of selective prosecution.
And could you remind us in a little time we have left of what was the actual, what was the Rainbow Warrior doing at the time it was bombed by these French agents?
At the time, Greenpeace, as its history also, was rescuing people from the island of Rongelap, who had asked that we rescue them and evacuate them from their island and relocate them to another island. They had had years of radiation coming on down to them from the United States bombing that area through nuclear testing. They would be setting off nuclear bombs for testing, bombs that are larger than Hiroshima and that had devastating impacts on the villagers there, suffering from radiation sickness, thyroid cancer, genetic disorders, miscarriages in the children. So we had first done that, and then they had spent a few days in the Auckland Harbor in New Zealand on their way to Mururoa in the French Polynesian Islands to protest their nuclear testing there.
Deepa Isaac, we want to thank you very much for being with us, staff attorney at Greenpeace. And this interesting note, last year, the New Zealand papers reported that the brother of the French presidential candidate, Ségolène Royal, was also involved in the bombing of the Rainbow Warrior. Gerard Royal was reportedly the agent who attached the bomb to the hull of the ship. This according to another of their brothers, Antoine Royal, in an interview. That does it for today's broadcast. Our website's democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Berkshire, Hope Dokadoos, John Hamilton, Elizabeth Press, Aaron Maté, Jen Utes, Nick Marsilio and Miguel Nagura are engineers. Today's special thanks also to Angela Alston, Becca Staley, Susie Salami, Hugh Grant, John Randolph, Tori Townsend, Nicole Salazar, Samantha Chamblee. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks so much for joining us.